Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing podcast. This is Matt Halloran. Today we have a very, very special guest of ours here. Her name is Lynn S. Evans. Now, she's been a client of Top Advisor Marketing for a while now. We did some branding work for her, and she actually does a podcast. But what we're going to focus on today is we're going to focus on the book that she wrote, because I know that there are many advisors who listen to this podcast who think that a book could be a great marketing opportunity. Now, Kirk and I have done podcasts on writing a book or not. In fact, I think it's To Book or Not To Book is the name of the podcast. And Kirk and I, surprisingly enough, didn't see eye to eye on if you should write a book or not. But we have somebody here, Lynn, who has written a book. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's a great philosophical idea on boomer women and helping overcome their financial illiteracy. So, Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Matt. Glad to be here.
All right. Tell me where this came from. I mean, did you just wake up one morning and say, goodness gracious, I'm going to write a book?
Oh, I wish it was that easy. No, this came from working with, I'd say her title is a growth strategist. So otherwise known as, I would say, a business coach. And I'd been working with this woman, and I'll just give her a plug, Aldana Ambler. She's been working with me for 10 years, and somewhere around the seventh or eighth year, I said to her, Aldana, I am bored with what I'm doing. I need to do something differently. And she said, Lynn, why don't you consider writing a book? And I laughed hysterically and I said, are you kidding me? And what would I write this book about? Because really there's nothing I can add to the picture here. She said, well, look at it this way. You have been working with women for 30 years at that point. And she said, you probably have a lot of great stories of these women that you've worked with and some of the things that they came in with and how you helped them resolve the issues and how their lives have changed since they worked with you. I said, well, yeah. She said, all right, so here's the first thing I want you to do. I want you to just arbitrarily take 12 women who are clients and write their story, as long as the story needs to be or as short as it needs to be. But I just want you to write stories from 12 women that you would say you have a good relationship with. I said, okay. So I did that. That took me, I don't know, maybe about an hour or so one day. And she said, all right, now what I want to do is I want to call each of these women. I want to talk to them. And I'm going to ask them, what are the adjectives that they would use to describe your relationship with them? And I said, okay. So she said, I want you to introduce me to them by email and give me their contact information, and I will do that, and I'll get back to you. So about 2 weeks later, she had contacted every one of them, and she had some common adjectives that they had used. And she said, that's the theme of your book. I said, okay, I get that. And then it was things like trust, availability, warmth. There was a whole bunch of them like that. I forget what they were, but she came up with them. And I said, all right, so now what do I do? And she said, well, most books run about 10 to 12 chapters, about 120 pages. That's a standard book. Now, you should also know that she's written three or four of them, so she speaks from experience. She said, the first one is an introduction, the last one is a wrap-up, and the other in between, you just pick a topic. And she said, you know what all the topics are, and put three or four bullet points under each one of those topics, and that will become the outline for your book. I said, that makes sense. So I did that. And then I got into the thick of it, which was to start writing. Now, I should also tell you that I had been writing a column in a regional business newspaper for 10 years up to that point. So I had kind of honed my skills at presenting the problem, developing the idea, and then coming up with the answer all in about 600 to 800 words. And that's fine because that worked for a column. But now I had to write a book. And it was really hard for me to stretch that concept into what would be somewhere between 8 to 10 typed pages, which is a lot of writing. Now, I know I had a laptop computer and I could write it all down, but I found it easier to physically write it on a piece of paper, cross it off, erase it, go back and do that kind of stuff. And what I did was I designated every Monday afternoon to writing the book. And so that would mean I would get some lunch and just come up to this little room I had in the house and just sit down where I left off, go back and read what I had written and just pick it up from there. And I would write on average, I would say 3 to 4 pages every Monday. And if I get bored with a particular topic or I got stuck and I couldn't think of what else to say, I would go to a different chapter and start writing something there and then come back. And that took about 3 years to do that with some, as I said, time off for good behavior. But then I hit a spot about 6 months before it was published. And I just couldn't write anything. I just didn't even want to sit down with it. I was sick of it. I didn't want to hear about it. So Aldona Ambler challenged me and said, "Do you think it's possible that you could finish this book by the end of the year and get it published?" I said, "Of course it's possible." But I said, "Is it probable? I don't know. I don't know." Well, she said, "Why don't you take that on and see what you can do?" So I did. And I sent it to an editor. The editor was someone that had been referred to me by someone else, a friend of mine who had written a book. And I worked with her, and we got it all done and then sent it to a woman who packages it so that I could send it to Amazon. And I was using, at the time, it was Creole, it was called createspace.com, where you could upload your manuscript and they would produce the book on demand. So if somebody wanted that book and they bought it, then they would print it that day and send it out. So I thought that was really pretty neat. It was a significantly different cost structure than what Aldona had in the past when she had her books published. And because of this createspace.com with Amazon, people can sell books, buy books, write books like we could never have done it before. And it was just a significantly different, lower cost than what everybody else had done. And I think all told, between the editing and the uploading and all of what had to be done, my hard costs for this were something around $3,500. Now, most people would say if you did a book in a traditional way, where you can go take it someplace to be submitted, like let's just say Harper and Row or any one of them, any of the big places, if they buy your book, they might give you an advance. They might give you an advance of maybe $15,000, but that would be mostly for your costs of marketing and promoting the book. And then you'd have no way of controlling what happens to your book. And I learned that if you use one of those services and you send it out, they would say, okay, the marketing is on us. And they would decide where in a bookstore your book would live. And if they did any kind of special marketing events, they might ask you to show up and sign them, which is fine. But if it didn't sell a certain number of books in a certain time period, off the shelves it would go. And then it would go to a retailer who would then sell it somewhere else at a significantly reduced price. So you had no control over so much of your work. And I just like this idea of createspace.com because I own the manuscript. It is mine and I can do whatever I want to do with it. So it once that was done, it took approximately, once it was uploaded to createspace.com and I got the first copy of my book, that was about 30 days. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most bizarre feelings I've ever had in my life.
Why is that?
To have taken this thing in your head, write it on a piece of paper, then transfer it onto a Word document and send it to somebody. And then now you're holding something. It's like having given birth. Mm. I now have something that has my name on it. It will live forever. And it's, you know, it's just a bizarre thing. It was a really weird thing to actually pick up that book and look at it and say, that's mine. That was a lot of fun.
You wrote the book in a very specific way, and I'm glad that your business coach challenged you to do it, because each of these chapters, and there are 13 chapters in the book, you have real stories. So you came up with these 12 women to ask the stories to. Do you think that that story-based approach has made it more consumable and retainable for your audience?
Most definitely. And I think that's because what I've understood in dealing with my clients, especially the women clients over the years, is that women are very intimidated by money. And they're not that easily convinced that this is something that they can grasp and something that they can not just understand, but do something with. So the best way, I think, that we all know that people learn is by telling stories. And so I specifically used these stories of women who've been through experiences that are relevant to the topic so that there's no question that this is exactly where I belong because I can relate to this. And then at the end, we talked, if I had one, I'd make up another story and put that at the end so that it bookended the whole process. So that just in case there was too much factual information in there that I would lose them, I grab them again at the end and explain, this is what this all means. This is why it's important.
What has this done for you besides the amazing out-of-body experience it was when you held the book after it was published? What has this done for you, not just professionally, but personally?
Well, I've learned that our culture, I believe, has an automatic, I don't want to call it stigma, it's the opposite of that, a cachet, let's put it that way, an automatic cachet that if you wrote a book, you are an expert. That's just a given. So the book can be filled with data that's incorrect, but it doesn't make any difference. It's just the fact that people know that you wrote a book, you therefore are an expert. It has elevated my online presence simply by saying author and podcast host. Same thing. There's something about that, that people respect it and think that you are something above and beyond the normal run-of-the-mill financial planner. It is an excellent marketing guide.
Now, you just said a word that's near and dear to my heart, which is podcasting. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast. You've been doing it for 3 years now. How do you measure success with the podcast? I get asked that question all the time.
Well, I think it's a good question to ask because, frankly, I'm looking at that myself and asking myself, is this really worth it? I don't know. I know that I love doing it. I think it's a lot of fun. It really enriches my life by listening to people who've been through some of these issues that are in the book and hearing how they've come through it. What have they done? How has this process of whatever it looked like in the moment, which would be something really awful and nasty and difficult, how that process has made them a better person in that they now know they've been through something, they survived, and not only have they survived, but they've learned something that's been very helpful in their life. So to me, that in and of itself is a wonderful thing. How do I market? How do I consider it successful? I don't know, because I guess the statistics are that you have to look at the downloads, number of downloads you've had in the course of a month. Where I'm at right now is looking at the podcast as an opportunity to generate revenue from podcast sponsors. These would be advertisers who would be interested in the market that I'm dealing with, which is baby boomer women. So I am currently looking at proposals I'm sending out to organizations who would be interested in being monthly supporters of this podcast, and seeing how we can measure that success as well for them. For me, it's an opportunity to generate some interest in perhaps wanting to become clients, but more importantly, my design behind this podcast at this point is to say there are plenty of financial advisors out there, specifically women advisors, who have a particular understanding of how women relate to money. I am looking at the podcast as being an opportunity to screen women around the country and then say, here is the person I'm going to suggest that you get in touch with. If you're out in Kalamazoo, if you're out in Seattle, if you're in Miami, wherever you are, I have a financial planning network of women advisors who can help you get through what you need to get through. That's the goal for me.
Do you have a time frame on that goal? How I just get the quantification question, Lynn, a lot when we're taking our podcast prospects through the prospecting sale, mm-hmm. you know, and they'll say to me exactly what, you know, I just asked, you know, how do you quantify it? What's your return on investment? Now, you're looking at this from a much bigger standpoint than just being a local thought leader, because hopefully The Power of the Purse is going to become a nationally recognized podcast. And I think that you're already well on your way to helping women, you know, really stamp out this boomer financial illiteracy. And I think when you get sponsors, that's really going to up the whole game and a lot more distribution. But with these two things that you've done, so the book itself and then also the podcasts, would you recommend either of these to our listeners?
I think it's important that the expectations behind the podcast are reasonable. I believe that many people have tried in the past to say that the podcast is the ticket to you being different than the guy down the block, or being different in the sense that you have an opportunity to let people get to know you personally before they pick up the phone. I have not seen that people are picking up the phone and calling me because they've listened to the podcast. I also think that the podcast is something that is a secondary or tertiary type of marketing. If your fundamental marketing plan is not in place, then looking to the podcast to be the end all and the be all is not going to work. It takes time. And I know now what I didn't know when I first started this, that it takes between 3 to 5 years to really develop a podcast presence such that people will pick up the phone and call and say, I need to talk to you. Unless you're already a celebrity of sorts, where you can really milk that celebrity to get people onto a podcast and into your whatever, into your business, I mm-hmm. guess would be the best way to say it, but become clients. So I don't think that people really understand that being a podcaster does not produce financial results within 6 months. And if that's their expectation, then they're misinformed.
Sure. Yeah, we definitely say that you have, with a strong social media presence, and that's kind of a loaded question there too, or a loaded statement, because you really do need to have a halfway decent amount of listeners already, or people who are paying attention to your thought leadership in order to launch the podcast. Now, you did say a fundamental marketing plan. How about we wrap up today's podcast by talking about this? You've been in the industry for a while now. In fact, you had said that you had started out in the insurance industry after you had gotten your teaching
in French? Yeah, teaching degree.
What was the language?
Secondary education with a major in French.
Major in French. So there are a lot of people who've gotten into our industry, Lynn, and I'm sure you've run into them at conferences who started out being a teacher, because that's a huge aspect of what you do. And you've continued that throughout your entire career by continuing to educate people. But when you're thinking about when you were growing your practice, because you've gone through some very interesting iterations professionally, when you sold your practice, which you had said on another podcast that you were surprised at the value of what you had built. What was your fundamental marketing plan? What was your core?
I wouldn't say I was a good salesperson. And I don't mean that in a negative way, that you have to be a cheesy salesperson in order to succeed in this business. But I did know that I'm not someone who could start a conversation with somebody that I met over lunch or something and start into a conversation about, you know, what are you doing with your personal finances? I couldn't do that. And as a matter of fact, that's an important thing to note too. When I first started doing the podcast, that was the goal, was for me to interview women who were successful women and then try to get them as clients. And I found that model did not work. It didn't work for me because I was not comfortable or confident that was something I could pull off. So that was something that was probably in my brain from years and years and years of not feeling that I was capable of doing that. So the way I developed the business originally was simply I went out and talked to CPAs and attorneys and told them what I was doing, which at the time was novel. Nobody ever heard of that. So it took a long time for me to do it. And also I would say writing that column that I did in the newspaper gave me, again, immediate, you talked about being a thought leader locally, that really created that. I also did and am still doing a radio show locally, which is something that I do with a partner, and the two of us talk about a lot of fun things. But in one of the segments, I talk about retirement. I talk about women and finances. I talk about those things that create that world. So it's kind of passive when we talk about the kind of marketing plan I've used. And I've also been involved in so many organizations, and I've been on the board of many organizations. And so that has helped to give me credibility and for people to get to know me and to see who I am. And that's kind of how I built the business.
You have taken the long view marketing, and I really wish more financial services professionals would realize that, because of your long-term view when it came to growing your business, you might not have had the immediate results that you wanted, but you built something that was very valuable for somebody else to purchase. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I happen to love your podcast. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you. I think that your book is amazing. But so you have the attention of thousands of financial services professionals right now, because the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast does seem to garner some pretty good listenership. All of your wisdom on writing a book and the process involved with that, the fact that you wrote every single solitary week, you had a page goal, all of those things are, if you talk to a writing coach, you really hit that head on. And then, of course, you had writer's block, which happens, I think, pretty much everybody too, until somebody throws that gauntlet down, much as your business coach did and said, you got to get this done. You do a podcast, you do a radio show, and you write for, you do some writing too. If a financial advisor wanted to utilize the Power of the Purse podcast, utilize the book to be able to help with getting the attention of these boomer women who need this financial education, what sort of advice or what can you do for them? How's that?
Well, I think when you're talking about the book, I think the book is kind of what we used to call a primer. So it's the basics of finance, but not in a context where it's all of our financial planneries talk. It's really designed to try to, it's a hard blend to try to make sure I reach women who know nothing and women who know something, and try to find an in-between space where they're not bored to tears, or it's not too simple that they can't, they don't want to stay. On the other hand, it's not so involved that people just say, I can't deal with this. It just feeds right into my assumption that I'm not capable of understanding this stuff. So I would say, frankly, if somebody wanted to use the book as a marketing tool for women to get them to come in and see them and talk to them, I would love to talk to those financial advisors, because I could significantly reduce the cost and sell them in bulk. And it would be great. It would be great to get that, to my point before of trying to erase financial illiteracy among women, this would be a great way to start.
I love that idea. So what is the best way for them to reach out to you to find out about some bulk book orders, or maybe even to get some training from you about how to communicate to women more successfully and attract the boomer women?
They can reach me at Lynn Evans@evans.com.
Well, Lynn, thank you very much for your thought leadership today and showing us a little under the hood about the processes and all of the different marketing things that you've done, because that's what Top Advisor Marketing Podcasts are all about.
Exactly.
Well,
thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Lynn. Now, for those of you who are contemplating writing a book, I'm just going to do a quick summary here. There is a substantial amount of discipline that you need to have in writing a book. If you're not a great writer, there are great ways to record a book by telling stories, by recording them and sending them to somebody. There's all sorts of services out there. Lynn using the publishing on demand is really the way to go, because then you're not going to sit with a whole closet full of books like I personally have sitting within eyeshot of where I am right now because we printed off a whole bunch of copies of them. Also, remember that not one marketing thing is going to separate you from every other advisor. You have to take a multi-pronged approach. Lynn has done everything that we have talked about on these podcasts to be successful from a marketing perspective, and she sold her business for a very nice multiple. It works. We know it works. And very few of you look at that end game. You're still so knee deep in the weeds, so you don't realize that the finish line is really not far away, since most of you are mid-50s, because that's the average age of a financial advisor in the United States. Lynn also did an amazing job of consistently looking at how she's being portrayed from a branding perspective, and also wanted to refresh that to make sure that she was good, fresh, new, and communicating her ideas as succinctly as she possibly could. Check out LynnSEvans.com. Isn't that what it is?
LynnSEvans.com? Yes.
Yeah. Check out LynnSEvans.com. Go ahead and subscribe to her podcast, Power of the Purse Podcast. It's wonderful. And then also go ahead and buy a digital copy of the book. I have found, as a financial services coach and now somebody who does podcasting, social media, and marketing and branding, that having a book, even if you're not the one who writes it, and handing that to somebody makes the whole sales process easier. Dave Ramsey is a perfect example of that. People hand out Dave Ramsey's book all the time, and they're not Dave Ramsey. I think that there is such an untapped marketplace of all of these women, because here's the deal. Here's some hard stats, and I'm going to be maybe 5 points away because they change often. But 90% of women are going to be solely responsible for their finances at some point in their life. And when interviewed, 70% of them didn't feel they had the financial literacy to execute and to be able to deal with being solely responsible for their finances. Lynn's book, what Lynn does, and having Lynn as a point of contact for you and your practice, can change your marketing, can also help you help a group of people who desperately are looking for help, and you can learn how to help them the right way. So Lynn, how was that summary? Did I miss anything?
I think that was pretty good.
Oh, good. I appreciate that. I really do. All right. For everybody at Top Advisor Marketing and Lynn S. Evans and Power of the Purse, if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure that click that subscribe now button below. And if you would like to have your own podcast, make sure you reach out to us at Top Advisor Marketing. You can reach out to me directly at matt@topadvisorm.com. That way we can get you set up to do a podcast just like Lynn and just like our other clients to get your thought leadership out into the world. So we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at iris.xyz.